Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Church Leadership Lab. We're really glad to be with you and glad that you're joining us for another conversation. Your hosts are coming at you, Scott and Casey. Casey and Scott, the hosts of the Church Leadership Lab.
I like it.
Look it up on our LinkedIn. It's actually not on our LinkedIn, but yes. Casey, how are you doing?
I'm good.
What's the best thing that you ate in the last week?
Oh, God.
I just thought of a question. I usually don't have a specific question, but now I do.
I'm so boring. I'm not boring. I don't find it boring. Other people find it boring. I'm plant-based. So I would be like, roasted broccoli and lentils. And people would be like, what is wrong?
Boring.
Just kidding. No, I switched. It sounds very sad, but I'm spoiling alert at the very end where we ask a rapid fire question of what is a great book. I would have to go back. I'm reading because it's like 1,000 pages long. How Not to Die. It sounds really dark, but it's actually a nutrition book about all these things that are, like, you know, really not great for us. And I'm really, really trying very hard to eat a plant-based diet. So my answers would probably bore you.
All right. Well, then, I won't ask that. Or you can share it still. Oh, yeah. Roasted broccoli, right? You said?
Oh, I don't know. It would be something much more interesting than that.
It was so boring. I can't even remember it, Casey.
No, it would be something beautiful and full of color and vitamins, and you'd hate it.
I love it. No. Whoa. Excuse me. Judgmental much. I would not hate it. I actually love plant-based diet-ish things. I just need to layer on a layer of protein.
That's fair.
Not from lentils.
I eat protein. It's just different.
From lentils. Let's be honest.
What about you? That's okay, fine. What's the most exciting thing you've eaten this week?
The most exciting thing? Reuben sandwich.
Oh.
So this will spoil recording date, but that's okay. We break the podcast rules sometimes. St. Paddy's Day, big deal in the Chicago area.
Oh, for sure.
I don't know if it is nationwide. Big deal in the Chicago. We dye a whole river green.
I was just about to ask. They still do that, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So as a part of it, every year, my wife and I, we make like corned beef and like we'll make Reuben sandwiches and the whole deal. So that was it. And it was fantastic.
I love it.
And I loved it. And it was not plant-based.
That's okay.
At all. It was the opposite.
So you had a Reuben, not a Fruben.
No, it wasn't like eggplant or something like that. I'm sorry. I'm just going to skip that altogether. You know what I mean?
I love it.
Yeah. All right. Well, it would be fun to talk about plant-based diets and how not to die, and maybe that's another episode.
It is.
But this episode, we are going to dive into probably a topic more interesting to our audience and talk about, what does it look like to care well? What does it look like to care well for your people, for yourself, for your ministry, all of that? And we are super excited to have on Laura Howe. Laura is the founder of Hope Made Strong. She's a mental health clinician, community development strategist, all for churches that want to care for their communities without burning out. She founded Hope Made Strong, which is an organization dedicated to equipping leaders with the mental health resources needed to create resilient individuals and churches with knowledgeable and confident leadership. She supports local church leaders to overcome and prevent burnout, create effective and sustainable care ministries, and to be a beacon of hope for their community. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. What an honor. And I would like to say, although not plant-based, the best I've ever had for vegan was some jackfruit fake wings. Yes. It was so good.
Okay.
Oh, no, it was jackfruit pulled pork. Yeah. Sorry. It was amazing. So I just have to put in a plug that I am pro. Yeah.
Weren't you pleasantly surprised?
You
said to yourself, oh, my goodness, this is delicious. Who knew?
Yeah. And my husband, who doesn't eat anything green, he was like, this isn't meat. And it was amazing.
Correct.
So if anyone has a chance, jackfruit pulled pork is unbelievable.
Man, did not even bribe you to say that. Thank you.
No. I don't even know if I should have like gone back and said that, but I was like thinking about it during your
thank you
intro.
Hey, that's good to know. We'll actually have you on then for the episode that we do on plant-based food and how to eat fruits and vegetables, but think you're eating meat.
Three listeners to that episode. It's
like, yeah.
And they're here on the call right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Laura, we're excited to jump in. One of the things we ask everybody, though, just as we kind of kick off, would love to hear. We shared a little bit of your public bio. Sometimes there's things that don't make that, though, that all your friends and family would know about you. So what would that be for you?
Oh, man. Well, I think it is that our family are big campers, and I don't think that's in there. Hiking and kayaking and camping is how reset and relax. And it is super fun for me. That's how we connect together as a family. So I think that would be something different. Also, you might hear my accent. I am Canadian. I don't think that's in that bio either. I can't help it. I'm probably going to say sorry at least four times in this podcast, but you know, sorry.
we invite it. Let your Canadian accent shine throughout our whole conversation. Okay. No, that's fantastic. And yeah, I'm right there with you. We love being outside, camping, all of that stuff. Well, I know one of the things that Hope Made Strong helps with is helping churches create thriving care ministries. Mm-hmm. Now, often like care and discipleship kind of get lumped together, but they aren't always the same thing. So I'd love if you could just kind of start and hear, like, how is care ministry different from discipleship?
Yeah. So I think care and discipleship are like two trains on parallel tracks. They're going in the same direction, but they might operate or serve different people at different times in their life. And I think we hop on one or off another, or maybe, you can't go on two trains at the same time, but you know, the analogy stops there, but it's all going in the same direction where we are becoming more like Jesus in discipleship and learning and growing about who we are in Christ. And then care ministry, I think, is much more aligned with who Christ created us to be in ourselves. Are we safe? Are we, our strengths, who, you know, our callings, and there's so much overlap. And I think care has to do more with the struggles and suffering of our world and our situations right now, where discipleship is more kingdom minded and spiritual and heavenly, you know, focused.
Yeah. I think that's a really good distinctive, but also kind of, I feel like it highlights the need for both as well, because obviously we need to continue to be shaped and formed into the image of Jesus and what it means to walk in the way of Jesus. But we also, because of the world that we live in and the reality of the depth of brokenness, all have wounds and things that have hurt us, that then the scar tissue grows over, or we walk with a limp or whatever it looks like that needs care in order to continue then to be shaped and formed. And so I feel like that's a helpful distinction, that, you know, the trains on the two track, right? They're working kind of together.
Yeah. We're going in the same direction. The goals are aligned, but they just have perhaps different focus.
Yeah.
I think explained that great. So well. Well, Laura, thinking about having to ride the two trains at one time, I really like that analogy. And then Scott's talking about walking with a limp. I'm like, you're limping because you tried to be on two trains, people. I mean, is the problem. But thinking about the care ministry part of that, can you help us understand what builds the strong foundation of having a care ministry, first of all? And then kind of not to be Debbie Downer, but what are maybe some of the things that we miss or overlook that can have a really big impact on the people that we're caring for? So first, like, what builds a strong foundation? And then maybe where are we missing?
Mm-hmm. So often when we think of care, we think of how can we connect people to others? Refer to a food bank or a therapist or a community resource. And while that is really, really valuable, I think a care ministry, a strong foundation, is actually building a culture of care within your church. So rather than care being dependent on an individual, a pastor, a specific group of volunteers, or having to offload those care needs outside, it's understanding that a culture of care inside your church can be absolutely transformational for people. Because as human beings, we don't, most people don't require a therapist for their entire life. We actually access care in many different levels. I created a model of care of how, and pulled it from different other pieces of research, but adapted it for the church, thinking that, you know, if we're struggling, the first line of defense is self-care. What are we going to do to tend to our own needs? Whether that's, you know, being in nature, like we talked about, or eating good food, or having a sleep habit, or listening to music or movement. There's so many ways that we tend and care for ourselves. Then it builds, the next layer is community, then peers, then pastoral, and then professional. There's multiple layers that people seek care from. And I think sometimes in the church, we skip those first three parts, or we maybe not put as much emphasis or value the self-care, community care, and peer support care. And we think, okay, if someone needs care, they need a pastor or they need a professional. And we just land everything there. But if you filter through just human nature, so many needs can be captured and met in the community with peers and strengthening an individual's self-care capacity. And so I think that's where the miss is. A strong foundation for a care ministry is really developing a culture of care. And you do that through building up and strengthening the community, peer support, and self-care needs.
Yeah. I'm curious about, like, especially for church leaders, pastors who are shepherding people and leading people, how do you know when you need what layer? Like, are there some, because is it, hey, you need just good friends. Like, you need community that you can be vulnerable, authentic, who you are with. Or, like, you need some pastoral counseling. Or, like, you need to see a therapist, counselor, like, how do you, how can church leaders get better at identifying that for people?
Yeah. Triaging needs is probably a skill and a missed opportunity for many churches. They don't really have someone on their team where that can identify and have an understanding of the scope of care that is available for their people. They don't know what's available in their community. They don't know the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist. You know, there it's a skill set, to be honest with you. And it can be learned. I talk about it in my podcast that I have, different how to know when to refer and what are the different skill sets. But when you think about any other area of your life, whether it's nutrition or physical fitness, or I don't know, even as basic as budgeting, we just start with the basics and build on top of that. And so it would be, you know, not every person is going to be a power lifter. You know, you need to start with some basics, some core, some balance, some strength training. And I'm saying this like I know what I'm talking about. I have no idea what it takes to be. I should have picked that one.
Really good.
You know what I mean? I think it's just logic, right? When you're thinking of nutrition, you just start with the basics. Are you eating real meals at a table and hitting all the key nutrition values and things like that? And so and this is what I'm talking about with building a culture of care, rather than trying to professionalize churches or, create or look at the lack of skill set in your church. Say, okay, what do we do well? Lean into those strengths and then refer for the rest. And so if you have great, you know, community and peer mentors and coaches and, you know, maybe that's an elder or small group leaders, it could be many different, you know, ways and names of looking at it. But if you find that those aren't meeting the needs, then you just level those up. But I definitely definitely recommend churches investing in a care coordinator or someone who has the skill set of triaging. It could save so much pressure on the pastor to think they have to be all things to all people, because that is, professionals don't even do that. It's not even realistic for that to happen. So I really, it is a skill set, but I think churches undervalue the incredible transformational power of peer support and community support.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that right there, what you just said, that you said that as an encouragement, you know, I would encourage every church to have a care coordinator. Do you feel like that's one of the pieces that is most overlooked? Is that as a dedicated person, whether it's a full-time staff member, or of course that could be a lead volunteer. We're not saying, like, you know, go spend X amount of dollars on a new staff role, but just a designated person that's doing intake, that's all they do, or it's a big chunk of what they do.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's one of the things that's missed?
I think that's what churches are discovering that they need. I have a heart. I really resist I'm going to pause there for a second. I always resist the tendency or the habit or how easy it is to put all churches should have this, because I think care really depends on the culture of your community and the demographic of your church. But I do believe that, yes, churches are becoming more aware that this role is missing, and they're applying it to a discipleship pastor or a small group coordinator or a family pastor, or, you know, or they are not in equipping an individual, but they're putting their whole team through training, so everyone has the ability to kind of triage or know what would be appropriate. And personally, I'm a big advocate of that. And that's what I do, because that's what I do, right? But I do recognize that every church is unique, every budget and community and calling on a church is unique. So although it would be nice to say every church should or must have, and I don't believe that's what you're saying, but we can't have cookie cutter churches because we don't have cookie cutter people. Right. So, but that skill set is very, very valuable for a church.
That's good.
Well, and I love how you kind of call out a handful of ways to address that. Because I think the big idea is, hey, it's important to not just assume everybody needs one type of care,
right,
that we sort of slap that on, regardless of what it is. It's saying, hey, it's important that there is some understanding, and whether that is a person, whether that's just the a pastor who just heard that and realized, oh, I need to think about that and think through those, you know, that hopefully that can be kind of an action step to help people get better, which then helps them care better.
Right. Absolutely.
Now, I'd love if we could, you know, obviously you work with churches to help kind of create care ministries and help leaders care well. But I know you also help with leaders themselves being cared for and understanding. So I'd love to talk a little bit about kind of mental health and church leaders. Specifically, what role do boundaries play in church leaders maintaining mental and emotional health? I think let's start there, and then I have kind of a follow-up.
Boundaries are, you know, they're bittersweet. Oh my goodness, are they ever hard to maintain? And they're even maintaining is like step three. First of all, you have to know what they are, and then you have to identify them and hold them and communicate to others. There's so many layers to boundaries. And obviously, you know, it's been drilled into us for the last couple of years that boundaries are important. But I like to look at boundaries, or try to rephrase it as boundaries, as something that might be a little bit easier, a little less abstract for some people. Okay, what the heck is boundaries? Is self-control. We hear about self-control and we think of that as resisting temptation, but that temptation could be to overindulge in someone's support, to become an enabler, to dive deeper into their story, to skip your lunch, to be late coming home, to not stay home from sick. We're over engaging, and that's not having self-control. Mm. And then recognizing that when people are crossing our boundaries, maybe they're having a hard time maintaining self-control and not, you know, crossing over that. So it's just a framing it a little bit different. That was like, oh, I've never thought of it that way. And that makes sense, that if I cross a boundary or I allow someone else, it might be a self-control issue. And that's a little bit more concrete. And at least in my mind, it's a little bit more concrete to understand. And it's huge.
Yeah.
It's absolutely huge, because well-being, compassion fatigue, burnout, these are areas where it's a slippery slope, and it can be a little tricky to recognize it right away. So it's easier to recognize maybe those boundary crossings first before really understanding, oh man, I'm in a crisis. I'm not well.
Yeah. Well, and I think of it like, you know, I live in Illinois and I'm not far from the Wisconsin border. So like, I know when I cross the border, I know where Illinois stops and Wisconsin starts. And so I think for me, understanding like a boundary line then is like, this is where I stop and this person starts, or where for me, it's like you said, like where I have self-control to say, no, this is it for me. Now this is you, you know, or something like that. Now, okay, the follow-up part then would be, like you just said, they're so hard. And I think ministry in particular, it's so difficult because you're leading, shepherding, and loving people. And so you get into the things of life that are emotionally difficult, that are hard. You walk through pain and brokenness with people. There's people who go through crisis, and you often are there in the hospital room or there, you know, weeping with those who weep. But you still have to have those boundaries, and you still have to sometimes say no, and you still have to say no to things that are good, or that, you know, isn't that what a pastor should do, or whatever it might be. So for those who are struggling with boundaries in ministry, what advice would you have for them?
Just want to validate the struggle. It's really complex, this area, because when you're in that moment, your emotions and feelings, which I don't want to push away and say, oh, that's the flesh, you can't think of them. Your emotions and your feelings are signals and signs to you that, you know, something is going on. You're being triggered. You're being impacted. This is a powerful moment. And how do you know when the Spirit is leading you that you need to step out and be a part of this moment versus you need to tend to this? It is a tricky, tricky situation to know where the leading is and where the pullback is. And so I think it's a daily walk. It's never, this is only in this time, or I go home at 6 o'clock, no matter what. Like as the Lord leads, and that takes, you know, a lot of discernment to figure out, and probably a lot of mistakes. At least it was for me. I experienced so much. I was off work sick and got counseling. And when I experienced compassion fatigue, and so I can empathize with those who are wrestling with that. When is the Spirit leading me to step in versus I'm being drawn in, maybe crossing boundaries. And what has helped me in the past, and what I hope is helpful for others, is rather than saying no to something, because that is the hardest word in the world, let's tell people what we're saying yes to. I do this quite a bit when someone asks me, Kay, can you stay after church and talk? I say, you know, I've committed to my family that I'm going to have lunch with them today, but absolutely would love to talk with you. Let's connect and tell them what you're willing to say yes to. And so saying no is really hard, but telling people what you've said yes to, this is a concept that I think is not original to me. But I find it really helpful in communicating what my commitments are. And so then people are it's less likely. It doesn't always happen, but it's less likely that someone is going to be offended or hurt because you said, I've made a commitment to. People want to help you honor commitments and support you. And creating, like I got a call today. Hey, Laura, would you be able to have a phone call this week? This is a bonkers week for me. And so they wanted to talk today, and it's a Wednesday at this time. And I was like, well, actually, you know, let's talk Friday. And so I'm not saying no, I'm saying what I'm willing to say yes to.
Yeah.
I think that's so good. It's silly, but I remember being a new parent, and I think I forget the term, not gentle parenting, but like a philosophy of parenting had come out where like, you don't say no. And we're like,
I remember that.
There's a term for it. And I'm sure somebody's like, it's this. I'm like, cool. It's so bad. It didn't sink into my brain. I remember thinking how, help me, and it was that, it was redirecting. And that takes a lot of practice, but you know, instead of like, don't touch that, it's, hey, let's do this instead. It's so similar to what you just described, where I'm not saying no, I am saying yes when I can. I really like that you're also saying, be a little bit vulnerable about what I've already said yes to, as if that's not something that we're allowed to do. And I don't know about you, but I also add, and I'm sorry, which I'm really trying not to. I'm so sorry I can't, because I've already said yes to this. Therefore, let me say yes to you later. And like, why did I add the I'm sorry? I'm so sorry I'm taking my kids to whatever. Like, you're right there. And I'm like, I'm close. I'm really trying. But like, it is hard, because no is difficult, especially in ministry. But Scott knows this, Laura, you couldn't possibly, but you're speaking my heart language, is I love when mental health and science and faith combine in a really, really healthy way. So I'm so encouraged that we're even having these conversations more and more. So I'm curious, as a professional who's in the mental health and the church world, what are you encouraged about right now that like even these conversations are happening? What are you seeing that gives you like, oh, we're onto something here?
I'm encouraged that churches are willing to have these conversations. I think mental health can be really scary, because not a lot of people understand it. And I'm going to be honest with you, mental health isn't logical. Right? It's not a cause and effect. It's sometimes it's something we've experienced years ago that is creeping up, and you're like, where the heck did that come from? Right? So mental health is often not logical. So it's hard to understand. We can't put it in a box like we can some other struggles. And so when we don't understand something, we can be fearful or hesitant to venture into that space. I totally get why a pastor is struggling to talk about mental health from the stage, because once you talk about it from the stage, people think you're an expert, and you're like, no way am I an expert, right? And no one wants to be put in that position. But what I'm encouraged about is that pastors and leaders and the church, the global church, have recognized that, wow, we can be a beacon of hope. We can be a place of safety, of healing, of comfort, of support for our neighborhoods and our communities. And so there's this willingness to step into this unknown space or this uncomfortable gray when we don't have all the answers, and willing to be with people because they understand that this is the transformational power of Jesus and the gospel. And we're willing to take that risk because people matter. And I think the momentum is building, and this is going to be the greatest opportunity for churches to be impactful. Of course, I'm biased, but I think this is where people are really going to be transformed. Like, churches are going to people are going to come to churches because of events or music or their friends, but they're going to stay because they're cared for and because they're safe. Yeah. And I think that is what I'm really excited and I'm hopeful for.
I've written down so many little things that you've said, by the way. I'll recap them for you later, but I love mental health is not logical. Like that, that alone to me is a very freeing statement. It's not logical. So when it's logical, there, if there's a problem, there's a solution, and go,
right,
hey, the weight is off. There's not a logical solution here. So like, congratulations, this is going to get messy. Yeah. But that takes a lot of pressure off, I think. I also wrote down uncomfortable gray. I really, really like that. again, all these are pitched to me to be the downer, but you just talked about what is encouraging, but what are you concerned about? What's the thing that keeps you up at night in mental health and the church? What are you worried about?
The flip side of that, that we are still just the opposite, just the opposite, you know. Yeah. Well, I could say that while people are really excited, I'm a bit nervous that churches are going to not see the value of their community and their peer support and the gospel, and try to professionalize and professionalize and become a clinical space. Yeah. And I really think it's healthy for those things to be separate. Now, I recognize and honor there are some churches that have a clinical counseling practice within their church, sure, or in their organization. And that makes sense. They have the capacity to do that. But for the everyday church that maybe you or I go to, or the vast majority of churches, it is volunteers and pastors who've been through seminary or, college and got degrees and completely different specialties. And so when churches are willing to show up in this space, I want them to come recognizing the power that they have within the community, yep, and live that out. Leave the clinical stuff to the clinicians, and just because I think, you know, there's research that is being done, or that has been done, at least in Canada, about the power of peer support coupled with clinical support. And they have found that it is significantly better recovery outcomes when they're together. And it's been long known that the relationship between the therapist and the client is more important than the actual modality or technical, framework or skill that they're applying. And so there's, I would love, or I'm nervous of churches overextending or reaching or not seeing the power of peer support and the community that the churches organically have. It's like Jesus created it, or God, not Jesus, like God created the church to be the cornerstone of our neighborhood. So let's really be that. Let's lean into that superpower that I think the church has.
Yeah. Well, especially too, I mean, I was having another conversation recently with somebody, and especially the current generation, coming generations, whether it's millennial, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, all of that. One of the things that I think we have to lead with and understand that's going to resonate is Jesus' goodness and the reality that that God cares about all of that. Not only does he care, but actually offers a way of life in which you can have, you can flourish and thrive, and where those wounds can find healing, and you can find a community of people who are willing to walk with you in the midst of that mess, but also continue to walk as you heal. Like, I think all of those things are crucial too. Not just, hey, it's good to be mentally and emotionally healthy, but actually this is an avenue in which we can really see the kingdom continue to grow and take ground, as time goes on.
Yeah.
So good. Was I interrupting you, Laura? I thought you were going to say something.
No. No.
Okay.
Awkward podcast silence.
No, I didn't want to interrupt. It was just so good. I didn't want to interrupt a really good nugget. I could take more notes because I also wrote down, I'm coming back to this, Laura. Boundaries is such a mental health clinical word. I love that you're talking about self-control, because that is a fruit of the spirit. Mm-hmm. So these things are biblical. They are created in the character of God. We've just maybe used these words differently to create that separation. You go, this is from God for us to protect us. Yeah. So kind of reclaiming that word in a spiritual way, I think was really powerful. So anyway, that's my last little nugget.
Yeah. I think there's so much overlap, and you said something there that is, I completely agree with. It's language. There's a hesitation to use science or psychology because of the language and the inferences or the assumptions that it brings. But this is gospel. This is in the Bible. And we see time and time again where Jesus has a trauma-informed practice, and that they use practice. You know, you can see that Jesus uses similar tactics or methods to support people that cognitive behavioral therapy uses. And then cognitive behavioral therapy doesn't work because some dude made it up. It works because it's a biblical principle, right? Right. And and so there are so many similarities and you can see that in the Bible. And that's what I'm really hopeful and excited about is, you know, I don't know how much more time we have, but I would love to share when I think of the role and the function of the church in all of this space. I think of the story of the Good Samaritan, and we always want to be the hero. We always want to identify with the Samaritan and be that individual to help that other person. But to be perfectly transparent and honest, if we really got down to it, we probably can relate more to the person that was beat up and bruised along the side of the road, because I know that's what I felt like in my life, right? And so every single character in that story is relatable. We can be that person that shows up, you know, unbiased and generous and compassionate. And we can sometimes be that person who's lonely and broken and struggling. And we often forget about the innkeeper in that story. And I think that is the picture of the church, that our community are lonely and broken, and it's Jesus or the Good Samaritans that are bringing them to the church. And that innkeeper tended to that person, and knowing that the Samaritan paid the price for them, and he stayed with them, and he and until his wounds were healed. And I think that is a picture in my mind of the church and what the church can be around this topic of mental health. I want to take the pressure off of pastors and leaders. You don't have to know everything about this. You don't have to be a clinician. You don't have to be all things to all people, but what you can be is an innkeeper so that people can heal in your space. And I just think that is such a example of what a healthy church looks like.
It's beautiful.
Well, you just accidentally answered our final question, which is so perfect. Like, I almost don't even want to ask it, but
yeah, you don't have to anymore.
You just did so perfectly. I'm going to put on a t-shirt, be the innkeeper. We ask everybody, Laura, what is one component of a healthy church? And if you have a different answer, that's fine, but be the innkeeper.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's so good.
Yeah.
Creating those safe spaces where people feel that they could come. And I know everyone has different traditions and different beliefs and approaches to life and challenges, but the innkeeper in that story took someone in regardless of who they were. The Good Samaritan provided compassion and cared for them, but that innkeeper had the same response to that person, that they took them in and tended to them. And I just think that is a picture of a healthy church, when your space and your culture and your community are safe for anyone to come in and heal.
So that's so wonderfully said. And I hope if anything, you know, church leaders walk away hearing that and embracing that. So appreciate you, just unpacking that for us. Now, we do have a little bit of time left. We usually do our final five. These are a little more rapid fire coming at you. So we'll jump into those. They're not too hard pressing though, I promise. Okay. The first one is, what's one book that you'd recommend to church leaders?
Oh my goodness. Okay. Right now I'm doing a study from Lisa Turkhurst, the Trustworthy Study, and it is gutting me because
thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa. It's so just, you know, being a go-getter, an entrepreneur, a leader, I want to take, you know, the reins and lead and go first. And gosh, that book is telling me that I need to trust and just step off that horse and trust. Mm. And so that one's really helpful. And also, I have to give a shout out to my amazing friend, Thad Austin, who wrote Caring for Clergy. It is a different kind of book than maybe some. It is taking research and applying it, and is looking at how the web and the community of care that is there for the church. And what they talk about is the Aaron and the Hers. Who are the Aaron and the Hers that are supporting the leader? And it is top notch. So I really love that one.
I love a good shout out.
We'll link to both.
Good. Number two, Laura, what is, be honest, the last thing that you listened to?
Okay. Well, let me look it up here real quick. Oh my gosh.
I love it. Woo! I love the real time evidence. Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh. I was a bit nervous there for a minute. No, it's actually a really good one. It's, a playlist called Soaking Worship. So I don't know why, but I thrive in working in chaotic environments. So put me in the busiest Starbucks there is, and I am tuned in, dialed in, but I need, this Soaking Worship, or it's just instrumental kind of, you know, music that helps dial me in. So that is at the very top of my Spotify list.
Nice. I love it. Read right from your phone too. That's how you know it's authentic and honest. Yeah. What is your favorite piece of technology? And the only rule to this one is you can't say your phone.
Okay. I was like, duh.
I know.
Technology? Well, right now I feel a little bougie saying this. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm just, I got a Remarkable for Christmas. It's like, it's like an expensive piece of paper. That's really honestly what it is, but it is so fun and I'm loving it. So sure. Why not that one?
Yeah. I've heard of those, and actually they look awesome.
Now so. I kind of want one. All right. Laura, number four, is there a quote, a piece of wisdom that has just really stuck with you throughout the years?
I'm going to mess this up. Better to be silent and thought a fool than open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Mm. Oh, I don't want to comment.
Very good. And we'd recommend such advice for the coming political season, at least in the U.S. That's all I'll say about that for church leaders.
Next.
We love you. Right? Yeah. All right. Last one. What is one thing that you'd like to communicate to our audience of church leaders?
Oh, my gosh, you're amazing. I'm praying for you. I'm cheering you on. You are doing such an amazing work. And if you're tired and exhausted and no amount of sleep is helping, but you just are, I just want to encourage you that you're doing nothing wrong. It's not a weakness or a failure. You are tired because you are doing incredible work. So we want you to continue to doing that incredible work. So come along the journey to get healthy. And I'm sure you have lots of podcasts on that and episodes. But it is not a weakness, it's not a fault, it's not a failure, it is not a sin, it's because you're doing incredible work in your community.
Mm. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, can you, speaking of resources and incredible work, can you share everything that you all are doing? I know you have a lot going on, right? Podcast yourself, you guys have tons of resources. So can you give people some of those and then as well as steps on how they can connect with you?
Okay, I'm going to try to keep this brief, but if you go to hopemadestrong.org, everything is kind of there. I have a podcast that's specifically for those who are interested in developing and building their care ministry. And then I have a couple courses that are do it yourself. One is specifically on compassion fatigue. Another one is training for your lay leaders. And another one is called the Attuned Listener. And I partner with a coach, counselor, Jackie Perry, and she teaches how to really be present and listen in a non-clinical way so that you can show up for people. So those are courses, podcasts. I have an event called the Church Mental Health Summit that I partner with Rosemead and Spiritual First Aid in presenting. And that happens every October 10th on World Mental Health Day. It is a free digital event with a ton of resources, like 50 TED Talks. And there's even some live workshops that you can be a part of all for free. And then the one thing that I want to highlight right now is a resource called Mental Health Sunday. So we were talking earlier about how it can be really challenging and not unsure of your footing and not knowing where to begin when talking about mental health on a Sunday morning. Like, I need to encourage and I want it to be scripturally based, but I don't want it to be like a workshop. So how do I talk about mental health from the stage on a Sunday morning? Like, let's get out of having a mental health group on a Tuesday evening in the back hallway. Let's bring it right to the front stage and talk about it, because every single person in your congregation can relate to it. So I have a resource, mentalhealthsunday.com, where it's pay what you want. So take it for free, you know, send $20, whatever you want. I want it to be accessible for your church, where it gives you everything you need to talk about mental health as a jumping off point. I provide, you know, bumper videos and social media and sermon notes, but it's all, we give you all of the links so you can edit, adapt, and change it. So it's specific to your church culture and community. But let's not the insecurity or imposter syndrome or anxiety hold us back from talking about this. So grab that resource. It's free, mentalhealthsunday.com.
Awesome. Well, we're going to link to all of that for people so that they can get it easily. But I'm so thankful for you and your time and just the way that you've, I think, probably opened up people's perspective, but also like encouraged and challenged at the same time. I think that that's going to be so helpful, and hopefully church leaders can use that personally, but also have it trickle down into their ministry. And so thank you so much for coming on the show, for your time today. And we're thankful for those of you who have been listening or watching, and we're so grateful to be able to bring these conversations to you. So if you found today helpful, we'd love for you to share it, whether you send a link to somebody, leave a review that helps get these conversations into more church leaders' ears. And ultimately, our goal is to hopefully then empower more healthy churches. So we would appreciate that. We're grateful for you, and we'll see you next time.
This episode of the Church Leadership Lab podcast is brought to you by Ministry Brands, the largest provider of church technology software. Over 90,000 churches rely on Ministry Brands for their single platform solution that brings together all the digital tools a church needs. From online giving to websites to church management software and more, Ministry Brands is leading the way in simple to use, innovative solutions, all with the goal of empowering healthy churches. To learn more, visit ministrybrands.com.